So I'm going to say from 8:30 until 4 in the morning, this poor man had to put up with this shell-shocked chick. I would have put her in her place so many Beckys ago.
I would have probably yeeted her out the door a long time ago.
What can you tell us about these creatures? This is probably the lead-up question.
Mm-hmm. He goes, well, they're dead, so they're all messed up.
Yeah.
So now the power goes out, and everybody gets a shot to their face where they're, like, shocked that the power has gone out. Except, mm-hmm. like, I mean, in a horror film.
So this is a black and white film, and if you watch the colored version, it doesn't really add so much to, like, you know, emphasize different things, maybe like the car at the beginning, mm-hmm. that you see it different color in red, and it, you can kind of see it, like, it catches your eye a lot quicker. Mm. But nothing that big. The black and white version is definitely superior because it does a lot of pronouncing of light versus shadow and mm-hmm. all these different effects. So if you are ever wondering about if you should watch the colored versus the black and white is definitely superior.
Thematically, it plays. It makes you feel like it's a little more old-fashioned than it is because they certainly could have used color, mm-hmm. even on their limited budget. But I think that it's just aesthetically, it's very pleasing. You would figure that in a us versus them zombie situation that it would be very black and white, maybe. And let me reach too far into this bag, but like the contrast, no one is objectively right. As much as I love Ben and I would stab any duck in the face for it, for him, like, no one has the strict rigidity of the black and white system. So everyone has a point. Everyone has a valid opinion for mm-hmm. why they think what they're thinking. And it just lends itself to the absurdity of it, that it is a black and white film.
Like most black and white film, this has areas of gray.
How many areas of gray would you say?
70.
Oh, wow. 70%. That's 20 more than I thought.
Okay. Oh, 50? Oh, 50 is better.
Satire.
Okay.
So now the zombies have started, they've decided now they've ignored them nearly the entire film. They've only used tools twice, but they all decide the power's gone out. I guess we'll pick up rocks.
Yeah.
Oh, and like clubs and stuff. They pick up all this stuff.
Right. There's like, I think my note was, zombie with a brick is a bad thing.
Yeah. So they start pounding at the door, and now Ben is trying to like stave off the door, and like and Helen's thrown herself against another door, and Judy is useless on the couch. And
no, Barbara's useless.
Barbara is useless on the couch.
Judy's being eaten outside. Yeah, as
Judy's being very useful right now as a zombie sustenance supplement.
Yes.
Craft services.
Ooh, these lady fingers taste so good. Okay, so Ben is
back against the wall. Helen, back against the wall. Barbara, useless on a couch.
Right, zombies are trying to get in.
Harry, top of the stairs, still looking like a jerk.
Right. He had mentioned to Helen that he's like, I've got to try and grab his gun. And because Ben's like fighting with the zombies, trying to keep him out, he doesn't have the ability to really hold the gun.
Well, he drops it. And then Harry does a side look back and forth with him and the gun. And then he makes a dive for it. And he's like, now I've got the gun. You guys, get in the basement. Mm-hmm. Helen, get in the basement.
Helen doesn't move.
Yeah. Yeah, because her back's against the wall, and she's like...
Isn't her back up against a door?
Yeah, and there's arms coming through around the mishmash of... Okay, admittedly, and I gotta say, Ben did not board that in a straight direction.
It's kind of hard to board up. Like Harry definitely has a good point, you know, when he's talking about all these openings and everything. Mm-hmm, definitely mm-hmm. has a good point with that, but he's being a dick about it, so nobody's gonna listen.
So Ben gets away from the door... And he pulls a board off of the door and chucks it at Harry. And Harry drops the gun. Ben gets the gun. Ben shoots Harry in the guts.
Completely justified.
100% justified. That guy had mm-hmm. it coming.
So Harry like stumbles down to the basement. Mm-hmm. He's like going to see his daughter. And Barbara finds her strength and helps Helen at the door.
Yeah, she like goes over there and like pulls Helen away, and then the board falls a bit, and then you see a hand come through and grip the door frame, and it's Johnny's driving glove, and Johnny's he doesn't have glasses on anymore, but his zombie face. Mm-hmm. And then she gets absorbed into the horde of zombies.
Right.
I guess Johnny did get his candy. Nope, yeah. I don't like that. Sorry, you can strike that from the record.
Sister Naomi.
I mean, but like treats is treats.
Okay.
Eats is eats.
I'm not kink shaming, so.
I will. Incest is wrong. I have a firm stance on it.
Okay.
Gross. So Helen's away from the door and she makes it down the stairs.
Yeah. No, Harry makes it down the stairs and he's like going after his daughter. Oh, well, yeah. And then when Helen goes down, that's when she sees Karen eating her dad.
Yeah. He's dying. He by the time he gets to the bottom of the stairs, he looks drawn. Right. And so by, you know, whether or whether he falls to the ground and when Helen makes it down the stairs, Karen is over him, eating him.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like horrified and just shocked. And Karen's like, well, I'm done with this treat. And so Helen backs away, trips, lands on her back. This has happened like three times in this film with various different people. In the way that all the zombies are now using tools, Judy grabs a trowel.
Karen grabs the trowel.
Why is every girl Judy? Ah, God bless it. If you can make me sound smart in this episode, I will give you a dollar. Karen grabs the trowel, like all the zombies are using tools now, and she stabs her mom.
It's a fully effective and creepy scene because like there's like the music is just so intense at this point.
Yes.
And she's not eating her mom. She is killing her mom.
Yeah. So it's not just there's a TikTok that I like that goes, mother, mother, I crave violence. And they don't just want to eat. They want to cause harm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, fascinating.
Yeah.
What about radiation makes you want? Like, you can imagine it making you want to eat, like just messing up your internal brain thingies. But in terms of like causing pain.
Yeah. Even the feral ghouls in Fallout just sort of attack you. So.
All right. Mm-hmm. But so now.
So Barbara is absorbed into the horde. Mm-hmm. I think Ben at one point is trying to help her. But it doesn't work.
Yes.
I wrote in my notes, Johnny's coming to get you, Barbara.
But then, okay, so then Ben makes his way to the door of the basement, right? The cellar door. He grabs Karen and yeets her out into the living room and then shuts the door behind him and bars it.
I like how you said yeet.
He like grabs her by their little, like what, 10-year-old shoulders and like shoves her out there. She turns around and she's like, what the? Like, I've been in the basement this whole time. I finally get out of the basement, and I don't want to be out of the basement anymore, guys. Mm-hmm. Harry wakes up, but he ain't Harry anymore.
Nope.
So Ben gets to kill him a second time.
Yeah. I think he, like, shoots Harry, and he falls down, and then he shoots him a couple of times in the head. And then Ben looks at Helen, and she's just got this trowel sticking out of her, and she's got blood all over her.
Yeah, and you don't expect her to move.
But then she does.
So he has to kill poor Helen.
Poor Helen. Yeah. And then he's just sort of like, you know, like I don't want to say cowering in the cellar, but he's found his sanctuary in the cellar, the place that he didn't think he'd find it.
Well, yeah. He sits down against like a workbench or whatever. And I will say that the zombies kind of forget that the door is there pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like they go after it for like a minute, but then they all start wandering away.
Wasn't there one zombie that was like taking one of the table legs and like beating it down on the ground?
The table? Okay. I have to admit, three of the four table legs from that table that Ben took apart, like in episode one or two, or part one or two of this episode, like three of them get used. Two of them are torches used by the group. And then the third one, there's a zombie who's hunched over, who's just tapping the ground with it. Like, tap, tap. Not like I'm walking with a stick, like remembered physical motion, but like a prospector making sure that the ground beneath them in a mine isn't going to go out. It's like tap, 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 tap.
Like
tap,
mining, tap. Mining for brains, so to speak, because the cellar's underneath them.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay,
that
good.
That is accurate.
Next morning.
A posse moving slowly towards the farmhouse.
Ooh, militia.
Oh, yeah. I guess militia's better than posse, but.
Militia sounds more official. Posse is probably more accurate, though. Because of how they act.
Well, we've got Chief McCollum again.
Yeah. And he's like directing people like, we got this farmhouse that's over here. I need 4 to 5 men. Come with me.
And I need you to start a bonfire in the middle of that field. So get these bodies on there. But we cut back to Ben in the basement and he hears dogs.
Mm-hmm. And there's like kind of coming in, signifying that, you know, it was like kind of waking him up, mm-hmm. signifying mm-hmm. that it's a new day.
And he's hearing a lot of shots. But mm-hmm. as they clear the area, and this is my own personal hypothesis, right? The shot numbers go down. So now he's thinking, okay, well, they've shot every dead thing in the area. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's safe for me to go. Because he's cautious. He doesn't mm-hmm. run upstairs. He's not like doing cuckoo crazy eyes anywhere. Mm-hmm. He's been thoughtful in nearly every action he's taken this entire film. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, when he goes to the window with the gun raised, he holds the gun up to make sure.
He's very cautious.
Yeah. And none of the zombies have used a tool that complicated. They've only used smash bludgeoning type mm-hmm. things. So,
and as the militia is coming closer, one of them says, oh, shoot him right between the eyes. And like very quickly do we see like Ben looking out and he has the gun raised. And then you hear like the shots getting fired and then it goes through his head. And yeah. he falls back. And it's so, like, in most zombie movies nowadays, mm-hmm. you don't really get that sort of, like, quick pacing. It's like, the scene's actually pretty well paced, where it's like, you know, it's very calm. It's very, like, slow pacing.
And then it just smacks you in the face.
Right. And so that's what makes it so effective.
That, are you 100%, 100%, and 2 air 5s. It is just, it's so beautifully done. Because the Chief McCullen leans over to the guy who says he saw somebody in the window and he's like, shoot him right between the eyes. And then he leans in and this makes me, okay, not super gun savvy, but my gun savvy listeners, applauders, you don't lean in when somebody's firing a gun. Mm-hmm. So your ear's right next to the barrel. That irritated me a little bit. But the fact that they saw just anyone, and most of the people they were shooting were like facing away from them or were obviously like a threat. Mm-hmm. They didn't verify at all. They just saw him through the window and shot him.
Mm-hmm.
And Jen was saying something about the script, about the difference between the movie script and the original dialogue, that there's a difference between, oh, how the book ends. Oh, sorry, not the book. How the script ends and how the movie ends is different. We have a survivor in the movie script.
Barbara survives in the script.
Yeah, but she does not survive this one.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and in that way, the movie is more like Psycho in that, like, your female lead dies. So there's that. But also, on top of Barbara not dying in the script, they make it a lot more clear that they knew that they had killed Ben. In the very last line of the script, McClellan says, "It's too bad, an accident. The only loss we had the whole night."
Mm-hmm. In the movie, after he gets shot, we just get pictures of the men coming in with like these meat hooks, which are reminiscent of like Candyman.
Ugh.
And they and you see them throughout the ending credits just pulling bodies into a bonfire and burning them.
McCullen has the last line of the film, and that's, I believe, that's another one for the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah. And it's just, it's so heart-wrenching. Again, I can see why people would go ahead and put racial commentary into this film, even though it wasn't actually baked in. And here's the thing. This script is so close, you could have very easily, like, moved stuff around.
You could, with just a few words, have mm-hmm. really shifted the focus of the film. Mm-hmm. And I think, now, this is my privileged self-talking, and God knows, I want to acknowledge the fact that I get to blasé through a lot of my life pretending that I'm not biased and privileged and mm-hmm. .. But when I first watched this movie, I don't think it registered to me the significance of Ben as a character. I liked him. I liked everything about him.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the movie. I did not think about his race. I had the privilege of not thinking about his race when I first watched this film. And now, as a vaguely more educated person, as an older person,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a more worldly person, I see more significance in it. But one of the things that I appreciate a lot about this film is that it is not heavy-handed with the wording. Like, he mm-hmm. never gets called the N-word, you know, which could have been easily thrown out there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, his race is never referenced, but it's in the room.
Mm-hmm. It's in the way that the actors are kind of, like, treating him. There's always this level of tension with how they're interacting with him. Especially, well, I guess I see that more with Barbara.
Well, and there's the man-woman dynamic. Mm-hmm. There's the meek and...
powerful.
Yeah. There are so many different contrasts going on that it's hard to tell what exactly is being pulled on at any given moment until you see something gentle done or something that would be against the stereotype done, like when he gets the shoes for her or when he slaps her back,
mm-hmm.
you know, like... you see, but you see the restraint there too, whereas if they had gone full stereotype, maybe there would have been less restraint or he would have come across as much more brash.
Yeah.
Something like that. I feel like, and this might just be, this is me towards the end of our podcast losing my grip on reality, but when I see a group of armed Southern men marching through anywhere doing mm-hmm. anything,
right,
I'm immediately thinking of something racially motivated.
Right.
But you want to know something else? That is, like she said, veering off in another, hey, my life is a ping pong ball on a roulette wheel full of marbles. And I'm losing every single one of them. There was no brown zombies. Did you notice? They were all white people.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I'm just saying. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, the main character was a person of color.
Mm-hmm. And he was fighting against the white horde.
Yeah. Who was in fighting with themselves with a whole bunch of other white people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he's just like, can we just do the rational thing? Can we just move on to what will get all of us the most safe, the most fast?
Mm-hmm.
Can we work together on this?
Right.
Oh, no, we're going to fight and bicker over stuff. Anyways, let's see. Do you have anything else about the plot that you want to talk about?
No, I think we kind of covered everything.
Okay. Well, we will note a couple more Sean facts to mm-hmm. close out the episode before yeah. we do our shocked and applauds, right?
Sean facts.
There's so many good ones, and it's hard to... I don't want to read you guys a list, but I want to, like, get them out there. Often cited as culturally significant. There are 5 sequels, and then there's some spinoffs that also have sequels. It's based on I Am Legend, the 1954 novel by Richard Matheson. And, I mean, that has been made into several different things mm-hmm. over the years. This movie is also known as Night of the Flesh Eaters and Night of Anubis, which mm-hmm. is a reference I would not get. Why would Anubis? What
okay. is the Egyptian god of the dead, I think.
Yeah.
No, I'm with that. But uh-huh. like, but where would the Egyptian come into anywhere?
Yeah, they don't really talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. So Sean has in here that it's banned in Germany. But what I was reading was saying that it's certain versions of it are banned in Germany. So I think you could still get it, but it's going to be tweaked
mm-hmm.
to be appropriate for the standards of that country. Though they accidentally, this is a good one. Okay, so this came out a few months before the movie rating stratum
yeah.
came out. So, and because horror movies were geared at kids, they sold these for matinee tickets for kids, like 9-year-olds. Like Roger Ebert went to one of the matinee shows and he said that he saw a girl. Hold on, let me quote him. The kids in the audience were stunned. There was a little girl across the aisle from me, maybe 9 years old, who was sitting very still in her seat and crying.
Oh,
I don't know. That sounds real sad. Okay, so then we talked about Russo, John Russo, the co-writer, right? He actually started a movie called Return of the Living Dead in 1985 that had 4 sequels. But Romero sued him for appropriating a part of the title of a prior work. And although it was not sustained, they made sure that his tagline was much different mm-hmm. than this film. They reference it in everything, Shaun of the Dead, Zack and Miri.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, where have you seen a zombie thing that was not influenced in at least some way?
Right.
I mean, just the pacing set mm-hmm. precedence.
Right. Even if you wanted to nitpick every little thing that, like, the acting of the time is always just a little bit, seems a little bit campy to me.
If I introduce somebody to this film, and I would introduce nearly anyone to this film
mm-hmm.
because of my own personal tastes, but also I think it suits a lot of people. I always start with, you need to remember that this is more like a stage production than it is like a movie that you'd be used to
mm-hmm.
because it's very much scene to scene and you have to listen for the little details and mm-hmm. you're not going to get the buckets and buckets of blood from works post from here.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a very good movie, despite the fact that there were a lot of limitations on them. And I think even Romero wasn't entirely happy with everything that was in the final product. It's still a very good movie. It's a seminal piece of horror history.
Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine a world without this movie in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I would share it with anyone.
Yeah.
Even if they prefer Ernest Saves Halloween. I think it's good that they saw it.
In Ernest Saves Halloween, mother's love is the thing that stops evil.
Is that really?
Yeah.
God, I don't remember that. I just remember Ernest being like,
Yeah.
I just remember facial expressions.
I remember those. I remember watching Ernest Saves Halloween as a kid, and that scaring the crap out of me.
Did it?
Yeah. And then I'm just sort of like, I don't know, like, anything Jordan Peele does is probably going to be a lot better as an adult.
Jordan Peele. I want him to be like, so like, I want all of the, I need 3 theatrical releases a year, Mr. Peele. Gimme, gimme, mm-hmm. gimme, gimme. Because, I mean, what was the name? Other?
Us?
Us. Okay. Other. Us. Interchangeable. Us was groundbreaking for me, like in terms of like modern horror. I just felt like it had been so long since something that was like not jump scary, and it was thoughtfully done, and people of color as the main mm-hmm. characters, and then like to have them be so multifaceted. They weren't just like this perfect little family that was doing a thing. There was like complicated situations. It's and definitely rewatchable and aesthetically like almost jarring.
Right. So he's like producing a movie. He's not directing it, but it's a remake of Candyman by the director is Nia Costas. And she's
that sounds familiar.
Yeah, she's doing a redo of it's not a redo. It's kind of like a not even so much a sequel, but I when I heard that the movie was coming out, I was like, oh, I should watch the original Candyman. Oh, I think this is on Hulu. So, or maybe I just rented it, but it was really good. And what I think is missed on a lot of horror is sometimes like something that a horror movie does that actually does like deal with people of color, specifically Black African-Americans. There's this extra bit of tension that comes into play because like the reason why Ben is so equipped for everything that happens in this movie is because he's a Black man in America in the midst of the civil rights movement, and he has had to deal with the prejudice that has been just like forced on him for his entire life. Mm. And that is why he is so equipped for this. Barbara isn't equipped for it because she's had a cushy life. She has been privileged.
Oh.
And it's like, so like, there's this whole, like, I've heard people make this argument where the reason why we have so many white serial killers is because of the fact that they don't know how to cope with the tension that this world can bring.
Oh.
And that's why they kind of go off the deep end. That's why people are so are freaking out about the fact that they have to wear a mask, despite the fact that more people are going to be dying of COVID-19 in the United States in the year 2020 who are Black service workers.
Yeah, because they're essential, but, you know.
And they're the ones who have been forced into this work because of the fact that, you know, even if they have, like, degrees.
Oh, I'm sorry, I should have said essential.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're forced into this work because even if they have degrees, they're less likely to get callbacks. Like, there was this whole study that was done about professors who, or, like, people who saw resumes with Black-sounding names, mm-hmm. and they get called back
and
less.
They did the experiment with the exact same information. They had the same work experience. They mm-hmm. had the same education level. Just the name was enough to,
right.
like...
To be like, nope, you sound Black. I don't want to have to deal with you.
I can't. Look, in the...
Can we go into like our shocked and applaud moments? Because I would love to talk about
applaud
moment.
Like, I know. I just want one.
Go for it.
I'm not even making a point. These are important discussions to have. Do I feel like I have enough education to speak proficiently about it? And even if I did, would I speak to the experience of somebody else who's lived it? No. This is why we struggled last month when I was trying to, like 2 months ago when I tried to pick out a movie that had like main persons of color as the cast. And then we were strongly into Black Lives Matter, which is still important, which we still need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then we switched gears and I was like, you know what? I don't have the education to speak on this and I don't want to, you know, have a conversation that goes on too long and is my freaking crackly saltine ass like talking like too long about it. So then I was like, well, I'm going to pick one of my favorite movies of all time. It just happens to have a person of color at the lead of it. And then like I tell Jen after I text everyone that this is the movie that I've chosen to do. And Jen's like, you know, he gets shot by a cop in the end. And I felt like dying
mm-hmm.
because it's a very important point. I don't think about that part because then the movie's over and I've only had to deal with it for about 2 minutes before the credits are done.
Mm-hmm. But it's still, I mean, this movie, I mean, just the fact that you have, like, how many times have you heard of the joke of, oh, in a horror movie, the Black guy dies first?
Right.
In this horror movie, the black guy dies last. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I don't think that we are the right kind of people to go ahead and really talk about these subjects. There are some great YouTubers mm-hmm. that are phenomenal in these sort of things.
Seek knowledge where you can find it. Mm-hmm. Seek it from people whose voices are directly affected by it. Mm-hmm. Just be willing to be uncomfortable and change.
Right. You're going to have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah. And you're going to get called out.
Mm-hmm.
And because I need to get called out.
Yeah.
So we can leave that there.
Yeah.
We're going to put a pin in that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then we're going to go on because we are a freaking conversational podcast about movies. We're going to go on to our formula.
Yeah.
So that Jen doesn't have to edit until her fingers bleed. So applaud moment.
Yeah. My applaud moment was Everything with Ben.
Oh, Everything with Ben.
Even if you wanted to like talk about some of the things that he could have done, like he could have been nicer to Barbara. I was like, he put shoes on her feet.
Yes. He gave her, they were together for hours. It was well, okay, so they got together just after 8 o'clock. I'm going to call it 8:30, right? Mm-hmm. They were with each other until, we'll assume he was in the downstairs for like 2 hours, maybe-ish, long enough mm-hmm. to sit and get tired and whatever. But well after 3 o'clock. So I'm going to say from 8:30 until 4 a.m, this poor man had to put up with this shell-shocked chick. I would have put her in her place so many Beckys ago.
I would have probably yeeted her out the door a long time ago. You had handed me this book that talks about the script and how there are moments in the script that are just a little bit like wouldn't really serve well. But Dwayne Jones does this amazing, like he just recovers that,
mm-hmm.
just recovers mm-hmm. that. And the fact that Romero didn't like, you know, kind of shut him down and let him do that.
No, sound like a dumb black guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He didn't do that.
Yeah. And that is what you do when you're working on a collaborative piece. And it just it works so well. Everything is in place. It's wonderful. Came together beautifully. It was the greatest moment in like cinema history.
I am going to like coattails on you on that one because Dwayne Jones is an impeccable gem. But I'm going to pivot and say that every single character had development. Every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Like short of like the ghouls themselves, there was not a person. Okay, maybe Karen, but she was half dead the entire time.
Yeah.
But she went from half dead to murderer, and that's a good that's a good change. Like, she did something with herself.
She developed.
She did. Taste for murder and eating parents.
Yeah.
I like that everyone grew who had any, if you were in the movie for more than two scenes, you had a growth moment. And I mean, I would say that for everyone, like even if it was a bit lateral, like Harry doesn't really like change a great deal, but he goes from being like defensive in the basement to I'm willing to, I don't know, shoot Ben by stealing his gun and stuff, like all of that, but none more so. And you could even argue that maybe Ben doesn't change a great deal, but his character is so significant and strong throughout the entire film. You do see him go from getting super frustrated to him working through the trauma that Barbara is going through. And I don't know about you, but if I'm vastly different from someone and I find their behavior difficult to deal with, and this I think is just a human thing, but if I'm vastly different from you and I'm finding your behavior difficult, I am inclined to be reactionary towards you.
Right.
And so the fact that he looked at this traumatized white girl whose trauma was making her act like an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, okay, what can you do? And he did that so many times in the face of a zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where you can see him struggling with like, okay, I have a path that I can go down. Mm-hmm. I can do either a dick thing and, you know, kind of be very gruff with her, very mm-hmm. abusive towards her, or I can go ahead. You see him making the decision to be nice. And so like, even if you wanted to argue that there wasn't any character growth, or at least specifically for Ben, you can still see him struggling to make that righteous decision.
And we have pointed out in the past that like we'll praise a character for not being rapey.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben's never that.
Right.
Ben's never that at all. But I say that because not only is he not creepy in any opportunity where he can be,
mm-hmm.
but he is actively a good guy in a way that most of the time people aren't. Mm-hmm. Like, he is more chivalrous than Superman.
Right.
It is not chivalrous to stand in the way of bullets if you know you're not going to get hurt. It is chivalrous to stand in the way of bullets or ghouls when you can be significantly hurt. And, mm-hmm. and he does that again and again for someone he doesn't know.
Right. Someone who is like actively making the situation worse, whether they intend it to be that way or they don't.
Yeah. He's like, you're having a dumb right now, but I'm going to make it so you don't scream zombies into here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have restraint after that.
Right.
The only time he and we all agree, I would assume, that Harry deserved to get punched so many more times than three.
Totally think that Ben shooting him was justified.
100%. Jen, what did you applaud?
Well, this movie is kind of like the Star Wars of horror. You know, it reinvented cinema. Really, when we think of horror film before this, it was the creature feature of Universal Studios, Bela Lugosi, with a whole bunch of makeup on and humanizing the monster. In this, we dehumanize humans.
Hmm.
We break down humans to their most basic form, where even we're seeing people just invent usage of tools in order to, well, we're dead people, but using those tools.
Animated corpses, Jen.
Yeah. So I think my favorite part of this movie is that nothing is taboo. They went into this movie willing to reinvent what film could be for horror. And there are a lot of racists watching this movie at that time who would have thought, okay, there's a black man in here with a white woman. Eventually, he's going to have his way with her. Or little
that
things
it could be
like,
violent or sexual or sexually violent.
If there's a black man and a white woman in a room together, that something bad is going to happen.
That's the narrative that racists are putting up in their minds.
Yeah.
Going in and seeing this. And we see little things that Romero does, like, okay, Ben is opening her coat up, but right before we cut, we see Ben drawing back away from
because he was acknowledging that she said she was hot and he didn't want her to overheat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we don't get a thought that maybe while we're off camera, he's copping a feel. No, he's pulled himself back away.
Yeah, he's already made physical distance like
so
that.
So Romero, even though he knew he was playing with a whole bunch of taboos, was able to, you know, signify, okay, that's not what I want you to think about this moment.
You know, it's commendable because also I think that a lot of, we're talking about race so much. Plotters, thanks for holding on. A lot of racism stems from proximity. If you don't know a number of persons of color or people who are disabled or people who are LGBTQ+, like if you don't know those people, only stereotypes get in your head. Only the thoughts of other people's experiences get in your head. Only your assumptions get in your head. Media gets in your head. And a lot of it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're finally around somebody of color, and let's say you're in middle America, you're not going to like import a black friend. You don't have that experience to be able to go to the theater and see this man act with integrity the entire film. When you finally come across a person without melanin deficiency, and you can say, that's a quality I saw in that character that I liked because he was so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the greatest improvement. It's not like the greatest stride, but to be able to say, you remind me of X and X is amazing. You know, I remember that quality from Y and that's amazing.
That is a very good first step.
Yeah, it's something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not how far you probably should go, but look, if you don't have proximity, if you're only around people who's a little racist,
mm-hmm.
a little racism goes a long way.
Yeah.
And if I could add a subsection to just my favorite part about this movie is the way that Romero reinvents what zombies mean in every decade that he makes a movie. So in this, it's Cold War. We're thinking about he's pointing to radiation from a satellite being the cause of this. But really, we're talking about what are we putting out into the world outside? What are we putting out into space? And what are the consequences from us reaching out to the stars and pulling something back into the world? And the defenses that we put up nation to nation. So this is very Cuban Missile Crisis era and Russia versus U.S., those kinds of things. So in this movie, it's a Cold War narrative. In the 70s with Dawn of the Dead, it's the consumerism and the zombies being just a representation of us going after that mall. And, you know, that's Dawn of the Dead. And then Day of the Dead in the 80s becomes this sort of authoritative or totalitarian military aspect of what are we allowing our military or our government to do to us.
And then Dance of the Dead is just how shitty high school is.
Aha, uh-huh. But that wasn't Romero, though.
It was pretty bad.
High school is the worst. And speaking of the worst,
let's talk about our shocked moments.
Right. My first thought was, my shocked moment is Barbara.
That's an easy throwaway.
I guess my, the thing that I would change in the entire movie is I would probably just up the production budget and try and really kind of so in the way that the first Evil Dead had a low production and that kind of worked to its advantage, mm-hmm. there are aspects of this movie that the low production kind of works to its advantage. But I still would have liked to have seen maybe just a little bit more polish on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this mm-hmm. point, I'm kind of nitpicking a great movie. So
I 100% agree with you on that. Again, the working conditions were miserable on this film. And I don't know if it's just being disillusioned with acting in general. Well, he did stage work and he was a professor and everything, but Dwayne didn't do movies after this. Not really.
Right.
And I wonder if it was such a bad experience that he felt like he didn't want to. And if he'd had a better experience, would I have had more Dwayne Jones in my life?
Maybe.
I would have liked that.
I would like to think that there is a universe out there where Dwayne Jones was just like the next Sidney Poitier. He was just seminal. He blazed a horror movie.
You know what Dan Harmon from Rick and Morty says? He says that, technically, in a infinite multiverse, everything is canon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
What was your shocked moment?
My shocked moment... I suppose I would have liked more dialogue overall. I think that the exposition was fine. Maybe if the characters were not all statically in the same place as soon as they'd gotten to the house. If somebody had come in and had more information, I think they could have upped the drama a little bit. But that being said, I feel like I do respect it more as a stage production. Could you imagine this being transferred to the stage? It'd be it'd be great. It would be fantastic. And you could do it. And so... It's a little nitpicky, but I could have handled more of it, especially if the additional dialogue that I'm daydreaming of, where I love it when Harry and Ben bicker. Maybe the teenage characters could have been developed a little bit more, as opposed to being these sex idiots. If you'd like to talk about sex idiots, please go to our Earth Girls Are Easy episode. They're just there to have a youth appeal, and the teenagers could have been completely gone from this film and it would have been fine. So they either needed character building or they needed to be cut. It's that Coco Chanel thing where it's you put on everything you want to wear, look in the mirror and take three things off. Take off the teenagers. You could have taken off probably Karen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was all right.
They could have easily had Helen get bitten by a zombie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Though you wouldn't have gotten that really great scene between Karen and Helen.
Yeah, no, you're right. I just think it could have used a little tightening up.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, would walk on hot coals to make sure this movie remained relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you see a movie from 1968 that aged this well?
Right.
I can't think of one. Do you want to watch Finnegan's Wake with us?
Finnegan's Rainbow. Sorry.
No, it's the worst. And my grandma was talking again about how much she loves it. And I'm like, I can't with this movie.
Oh, that was a fun ride.
Yeah, Mom hates watching movies with me now. She's like, I talk too much. I'm like, I can't help it. It's what I do.
Yeah.
Jen, what shocks you about this film?
I don't know if it's much of a shock, but something that I would change if they really did have the budget for it. I would have maybe started with Barbara and John in the cemetery, but then before we get to the house part, have Ben's intro. So instead of Ben talking through how he got there, if we had actually seen the truck on fire and the 50 zombies after him.
The story was... compelling. And if they did that visually and then they cut to something like him being like, and then there were no more noises
mm-hmm.
because they were all dead, I'd have been like crushed
mm-hmm.
because you'd have that really impactful visual storytelling. And then you'd have that freaking mic drop
mm-hmm.
line about there being no noise, which is the most powerful part of that entire monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, he could have easily VO'd voiceovered a scene filmed that way. But
yeah.
that maybe would have changed some of the narrative of the film, because we're sort of learning things as they progress and we're not, you know, flashing back.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been really awesome to have the voiceover of Ben talking through that scene, but I could have just as easily had that scene going into the house for Barbara and for Ben to meet up.
I appreciate the way that they kind of just drop Ben in her lap. So I wouldn't like to give that up, but I certainly would have liked to have seen a gas truck on fire chased by 30 zombies and then a diner that's like screams and screams and screams and then silence.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like that. Well, is it no longer the night of the living dead? Have we reached the morning? Are we all going to get shot now?
Just look out our window.
Oh my gosh. I'm never looking out a window again. It never worked out for anybody in this film.
Mm-hmm. Just scream out the window, "I'm white! Don't shoot!"
Oh, God. Nope, don't like that.
But yeah, I think we came to the end.
No, I'm not a zombie, I would say.
I'm not a zombie. I just start singing. Oh, have you ever seen Train to Busan?
No.
It's a Korean... Okay, so, like, you need... how many Korean zombie things have you watched? Because at this point, I'm, like, freaking out about two. And I feel like I need to watch more.
I feel like I've watched Korean horror, but not zombies.
Right. So in Train to Busan, there's like this moment at the very end that's kind of a little bit reflective of the end of this film, where there's like the last two survivors are coming through this dark tunnel. And there are people on the other side who are ready to go ahead and shoot anything that comes through. And they see some people coming through. And there's this little girl who's singing Aloha Oi.
Oh, wow.
And that's what makes them stop. And she's like crying. She's in all tears because she's had this big traumatic moment. Almost like seriously, it's wonderful how it ends. The movie, like the meat of the movie is pretty like basic, but it's still fun. And you still get like these great character beats and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But between that and Kingdom, I feel like I need to watch more Korean zombie things. Kingdom, by the way, is a Korean period drama, but with zombies.
I totally put it on my bookmarked stuff to watch, and yes. I haven't done it yet.
Season one tries to play it as straight as it can. It's kind of like the first It movie, It Chapter One, and the second, you know how goofy It Chapter Two was?
Yeah.
Season two is just a little bit goofy.
I love it when people know what they can do, when they get the little wiggle room.
Yeah.
Well, applauders, you've come with us on this journey. How many parts of this episode in?
Part 500 of 601.
We appreciate all of you being here with us. We thank you, Sean, for being our Sean Facts guy.
As well as our cover artist.
Woo!
Amazing. I can't wait. Can Dwayne be the cover of this one?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm not doing the art, so...
You got to check with Sean.
Oh, no, I'll give him free reign. He makes good choices.
Yeah, he does.
Good choices, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
We love you.
Yay.
We also love you, applauders. Thank you for joining us again. If you're brand new, welcome. If you're old and you keep listening, you might as well tell somebody.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. We will see you next time when you'll have known what movie we picked because you'll have clicked on that thing.
Yeah.
Here's Jen with our socials.
Our review of George A. Romero's 1968 classic, Night of the Living Dead, has concluded, applauder. Thank you so much for bunkering down with us through our walkthrough of one of cinema's most legendary movies. Want a break from movie podcasts, but still looking for something peculiar and thought-provoking? Hush Hush Conspiracy Hour is a brand new podcast with some very intriguing discussions about JFK, MKUltra, and the Philadelphia Experiment. And not just any book club, just released a discussion about Memento Mori, a short story by screenwriter Jonathan Nolan, later becoming the basis for his brother Christopher Nolan's Memento. You can find links to listen in this show's description and on Twitter using our handle @ShockedApplaud. Hey, this is your audio engineer and cellar dweller in hotter weather, Jen. Did you know that Shocked and Applaud is celebrating its 2-year anniversary August 30th? We'd like to especially thank those of you who have continued to support and listen to us across all 16 reviews so far. You can listen to our entire catalog of episodes on shockedandapplaud.com or wherever you listen and subscribe to podcasts. We'll be taking a week off to prepare and edit our next episode, and we'll be returning September 8th. It's a foreign film that both Naomi and Lydia have enjoyed watching several times for more than a decade. and we can't wait to share it with you. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
Yay! They're coming to get you, Barbara.
They're dead. They're all messed up.